Thanks for listening to Casualty Friday on the Fangoria Podcast Network. I'm Kane Hodder, and before we get into the episode, I want to tell you about Fangoria Magazine. Fangoria Magazine was huge for my success in my career. No one knew my name from anyone until I was in Fangoria Magazine. Completely changed my career, and I'll be forever grateful. Fangoria Magazine is now a deluxe 100-page quarterly edition. Each issue includes set visits, deep dives, new discoveries, and minimal ads, all printed on collectible-grade paper stock that reimagines the classic magazine for a 2019 audience. You'll see familiar names like Michael Gingold and Tony Timpone, and you'll see bylines that will freeze your face off, like Barbara Crampton and S. Craig Zahler. And the best part? It's print only, just like the good old days. Go to Fangoria.com to subscribe today. Do it. And I want to tell you about Diabolik DVD. For over 15 years, Diabolik DVD has been the source for horror, cult, and weird cinema to customers around the world. Diabolik offers a one-stop shopping experience for all of your favorite labels, including Arrow, Synapse, Vinegar Syndrome, Severin, Mondo Macabro, Blue Underground 88, and many more from all corners of the globe. Whether you are looking for the definitive version of Suspiria or trying to upgrade your crusty old DVD of Cannibal Holocaust, Diabolik is the owner-operated, small business choice for all of the demented discs you have been craving. Visit their selection at DiabolikDVD.com.
Fangoria presents Casualty Friday. Thank God it's Casualty Friday. Head on over to the water cooler to get your Friday horror fix. I'm Tiffany Shepis. I'm here with my friends.
Kane Hodder.
And Felissa Rose. Holy crap, we have the craziest episode for you. It is such a controversial subject. The subject of the horror icon. The groans are starting now. Because both of you... have been known for a very specific iconic character. I mean, Kane, Jason, Felissa, Kane. Angela, these are iconic characters. What is that like?
Okay, I'll start.
Yeah, please start.
Icon.
Yeah.
I
really don't care for the term myself because it's a little pompous. And if you... Certainly, if you refer to yourself as a horror icon, you're a fucking asshole.
You're a douche, yeah.
You're
the
biggest dickhead ever.
But if you allow your representatives to refer you that way, that's not great either. Now, granted, you may not know whether you're termed that way, but if you do know and you're okay with it, I'm not crazy about it. I mean, it's a little...
Well, what should it be called then? Like the horror big shot? The man of the hour? Like what is...
Personality. How
Beefcake plus?
Ooh, the well, sexy case, motherfucker? Yes.
Sexy motherfucker.
You know, do we have a definition of icon? Like what is the actual...
I don't think so. I think it's a term that's coined by people who watch movies.
Can you look up...
And decide, right? So we should find that true definition.
Really?
But it's a shitty word because it's like, it's so narcissistic.
It
if
really
anybody's
is.
Calling themselves an icon, I mean, truly you are the biggest asshole walking on the planet.
Yeah, I agree. And you need to be smashed in the face with a tightened fist.
So we're coming after you now.
I don't like it.
Thank you. I'm glad I'm the only one actually trying to look up the meaning.
Yeah, we're trying to do the show here while you're jacking around on your phone.
Lay it on
us,
baby.
I was actually maybe hoping you would pick up the slack for once. Icon, Felissa, you've been known a lot of your career for playing the iconic character of Angela in Sleepaway Camp. What?
Well, I just say I played Angela in Sleepaway Camp. And I think, I'm not really sure. I mean, I have no idea. You might have to define the word for us, but yeah. I was a little 13-year-old killer, you know, and I'm not quite sure how that term comes about. That's a better way to come at it. Like, how does one, you are iconic because you're the biggest serial killer in any horror franchise ever, 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 you're the icon.
Interestingly enough,
look at his face, right?
The dictionary actually doesn't have icon referred to, like, you know, there's not the, like, known as a supreme. It's mostly like a Christian kind of, like, you know, yeah, a religious
what
image.
Are you?
A religious image is an icon, like a religious image.
Well, that is me then.
On a small, yes, on a small wooden panel, very teeny, tiny icon, an emblem, a symbol.
I take it all back. It fits. So, I'm a religious icon. Yes. Really?
Perfect. Satanism.
Still religion,
an
isn't
object
it?
Of uncritical devotion. That's the definition. Object of uncritical wow. devotion.
I'm confused right now.
Which okay. is weird that these like maniacal killers
yeah,
are
really,
considered
that's ironic.
Yes, that is really weird. Do you guys find it hard to kind of divorce yourself from that character?
Did we get divorced?
Emotionally or physically, like when you're playing Jason, do you find it hard to kind of snap back out of that?
By the way, no more mimosas for the morning for her.
It means Felissa.
I'm having fun. Hi, I'm having a good time.
Sorry, your question was?
Do you find it hard to break out of that character when you're playing, when you've played Jason so many times, when they yell cut, to leave it there?
You know, I really don't. It would be nice to have some kind of story that, you know, makes it seem like I'm so serious about it that on cut I continue. Bullshit. It's fucking acting.
Yeah. We do our part, we leave, and we go to the bar. It's perfect.
It is very easy for me to bring rage on camera, but it's also easy just to stop it and leave. I mean, I do have a temper, as we talked about before, you know, in public with asshole drivers and stuff like that, but I don't think that
garage.
Has, or in my garage, but I don't think that has anything to do with the character. That's just me. But that's maybe because I have that kind of mentality and temper, that is easier to bring when it's necessary. That very possible.
I guess. You can tap into it, and I think that's the beauty of, like, you know, being an actor. You want to be able to be that vessel that you can tap into all of those emotions or colors or whatever you want to call it. But certainly when you're on set and you're playing a character, I think once they call rat, I can speak for myself. I'm done. I'm, you know, back in my own.
Well, I think it's probably a very healthy thing to do with people like us that make horror films.
But like, then you hear people like Christian Bale, who's like stays in character throughout the entire
which
shoot.
Is people say one of the best actors of
ever.
All time.
I know. So that's a great
so
question.
That works for him, I guess.
It works for him.
If it's accurate, you never know. He could be saying that just to be mysterious or some
and
shit.
Cool.
Yeah, but he also has the money and the time to hole himself up in a house for 6 months where the rest of us actually have to go and work and, you know, go out and try to make another living.
But it depends what you study as well. I mean, this brings me to, like, I was in the Lee Strasberg Conservatory for 4 years, and it's method and sense memory. And, you know, you create this world and this character in the background, and then can you just drop it all? And what? Yes.
Yes. You should be able to.
Fuck yeah. I want to get out of there and change my clothes and go out and have fun.
But I don't know if that's necessarily as method as being prepared, like, you know, creating a backstory.
Well,
like
Tiff,
you.
As we have, you know, we found out, I come fully prepared.
No, that is being prepared.
No, I
that's
do.
What I'm talking
I
about.
Go to set prepared. I'm ready with my character. I know all my lines. I hit my marks. But then I certainly am able to drop it. And I think that's also part of it. And the more films you do, the easier that is.
Now,
sure.
I just want to say that for me, being prepared in a role like Jason isn't necessarily going into the scene knowing exactly what I'm going to do. A lot of times I do things on camera that go by instinct. I'll cut and say, wow, that came quickly and I didn't even know I was going to do it. Not to the point of, you know, throwing off the other actors. I'm not going to compromise their performance because I do something so totally unexpected, but I love working with actors that do the seat of the pants thing like Mosley.
Yeah, Bill Mosley. And I have to say that's how I like to work.
He's fresh and spontaneous.
Yeah, he'll bring something on the second take of a scene that is totally unexpected, and a lot of people be thrown by that and fuck up their performance, but I love doing it because then it's not going to seem rehearsed.
Something new. Sure. But also, don't you think that's where we all talked about in our regular lives? We talk about how most horror actors are also really funny. And a lot of us have like an improv background, or because sometimes your script isn't so great, you're like, let me add some stuff in here. And Mosley's like a king of that, like the improv quick wit. You're really good at it. Like just being able to take a scene and bring it to a different level.
And there was a movie I did with Mosley called Old 37. About us playing brothers that drive an ambulance, and we have a scanner, and we respond to 911 calls before the real people get there, take the victim away, and which I thought was a brilliant idea. How did somebody not do that before we did it? Where, you know, we show up, we have half-ass uniforms on. You have a loved one in dire need of medical attention. You don't ask for credentials. When the people show up, you just want them to get help. Sure. So
that's a great idea.
And so we run a junkyard where we dispose of cars and bodies and stuff. And a plainclothes detective shows up and questions. I never speak in the movie, but Bill always does the talking for both of us because I'm like mentally compromised and I don't speak a lot. So he's talking to the detective, and he says the line in the first take, yeah, nobody here but us chickens. And then, you know, he continues with the scene. The next take, he says, yeah, nobody here but us chickens. And he looks at me and says, show them how you dance like a chicken, dummy. And makes me cluck around like a chicken. And I went with it. And it's fucking my favorite scene in the movie because it was totally unexpected.
And now your new name is Sexy Mother Clucker.
I like that.
Boy, so, she's so proud of that, isn't she?
Have any of you guys ever, and not to say that this particular icon didn't do a great job, but has there ever been a scene that you saw, a movie that you saw that you're like, shit, I wish I would have gotten that? Like,
wow.
Any actor. Like for me, for instance, I've always been a huge fan of the original Night of the Demons, and Emilia Kincaid's.
Who I love. I love Angela Emilia Kincaid.
Is like, would have been a dream role for me. Like I just thought she was like tough and cool and scary and badass. Like, and so not that she didn't do the most amazing job. Yeah. I am envious of it and wish that there would have been an opportunity to do something like that.
Absolutely. For me, it's Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I say it all the time. Marilyn Burns in that film, sure. The performance is so, I mean, to me, I felt like I was practically watching a documentary with her. And I just love her performance. It has so much range and hysteria and character work. I wanted to be her so badly. So, yeah, that That's for me cool. was definitely
and,
the part.
And for me, it probably seems like predictable, but I've...
Freddy Krueger.
Oh, no. Ari Lehman's.
Freddie's a child molester, so we forget about that. No. But I did do a Freddie shot, remember? I did one shot as Freddie, had the sleeve on and the glove. Jason goes to hell. Mm-hmm. But I stunt doubled R.A. Mihailov in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, so I did a lot of shots as Leatherface, too. Yeah. Always wanted to play Michael Myers.
Really? What?
Wow. Yep.
I'm in shock right now.
Not wait, more so than Jason, but once I played Jason, I was like, God, I would love to play Michael.
Because
he's another iconic cool character.
Because
icon.
Yeah.
See?
Religious figure.
But this is what we're bringing up. These are iconic characters that we're talking about. Leatherface,
Freddy. It's just
because
I always thought that no one had done as much as they could have with it. Because it's a tricky character, just like Jason. No speaking, no facial expressions. So very hard to look and act scary. And I wish I had been able to.
Was there ever any like opportunity to go in and meet with them, to audition for that kind of stuff?
Or maybe
was
now.
It just, or was it just you're on one camp, we're on the other camp? Get it, huh?
No.
I don't think that was ever, you know, really dictated that
No, he's Jason. He can't play Michael. But I just never was in the right place at the right time.
Gotcha. And well, the future of Halloween is open, so I think that we might see.
I didn't see the last one, but
it was good.
People tell me that James Jude Courtney did a good job.
James Jude Courtney did such a great job. He's really good. I mean, first of all, movie was produced by Ryan Turek, who we all know is like a huge genre fan. Like, so those movies can only be made
by
with heart like that.
Passion and creativity and love.
Yeah.
True love.
Yeah.
That was a love letter. I mean, it was absolutely
speaking of love, do we have any lovely fan and friend questions?
Wow.
Again.
I love the love.
There's so much love.
I actually have some love.
You do?
So from Angel Silva, she asks, okay, I have a question, Felissa. When you were 13 and Sleepaway Camp was released, what was your reaction seeing yourself with a penis in the end?
Ooh.
So that surprises Kane because he hasn't seen Sleepaway Camp. But, and this is spoiler alert, I should have said prior. So I've said it, but it was my penis was the first penis I actually ever saw. But truly, when I was in the theater with a full audience in 1983 when the movie came out, it was so jolting because, you know, here you are, 35 millimeter, and it's big screen, and there I am standing there, full body, full frontal, with my penis in front of my face.
But not, certainly not nude.
Fully nude.
Oh, yeah. It's
grasping.
Let me ask you, what was the term you just used?
Full frontal?
No. Before
full
that.
Nude?
Dulting?
Jolting.
Oh, jolting.
Jolting.
I was thinking jolting. I've never heard that.
It was
jolting. Okay.
It was jolting to see.
But wait, you're 13. You're not showing your breasts in the movie.
Right. So they made a mask of my face and they put it on an 18-year-old boy.
Okay.
And he was naked standing with my face. But seemingly it's me. You know, it's me.
So your character was a male then?
Yeah. Yes. I was raised, there was a boating accident in the beginning of the movie, and there were twins, and you're not sure who died. It goes to 8 years later,
and
you
see this movie, and I apologize that I haven't.
Yeah.
But sounds pretty good.
I forgive you. But yeah, so it was quite an experience to see yourself, not only at that age, now I'm 14 in 1983, and I'm seeing myself on the big screen with my penis hanging out, but it was wild, and I loved it.
Was
I thought
it a good
it was super
size
cool
penis,
and
or?
It was a little on the tiny side.
It was a little scrawny penis.
But it
well,
was,
that's what it should
it
have been.
It was cold out
for that age.
I was 13.
Yeah.
It was cold out, and I was right by the waterfront, so I had probably just
shrinkage.
Just been swimming.
There was some shrinkage.
Yes. So there was this shrinkage.
That was what was the terrifying part. Like, holy shit, my dick is small.
Yeah, it wasn't like, oh my God, she's a boy. It was, oh my God, my dick is tiny.
Oh my God, it's terrifyingly small. That's hilarious.
So I loved it, and I embrace.
That's a good question. I have a question. I don't know if it's okay, Don Judy. Thanks, Don Judy, for reaching out with this. You are such a Scream Queen legend, not icon, legend.
Legend. There's
another great, ridiculous term.
Legend.
Have you ever been approached by someone for something bigger, or would you consider that being a sellout? Yes, Don, I'm just constantly turning down those big budget projects because I'm like,
a sellout.
Not me. I want to stay in low budget indie horror. That's my goal.
Don, I'm going to find out where you live. And fucking kill
Don,
you.
Don, we're going to punch you in the
nose. That is a ridiculous question.
That is a ridiculous question. No, we always want bigger and better stuff. Like, and not saying bigger
and
as in to
that
get out of the genre.
Out?
Yeah, that wouldn't be selling out. It's
Don,
wow.
Don.
You always, in everything in life, you want to elevate, escalate, and
you
do
want
better.
Bigger and better. And what I've always said is my biggest goal for, like, my career would be to have that movie that had the big outreach, that went to all the bigger mainstream audiences. And not because I'm a sellout, Don.
She's a legend.
Because I'm a goddamn icon.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, wow.
But Kane has some serious questions, as always.
Well, yes. Oh. Once again, a lighthearted one from
we
Andy
love
Gateway.
Your Andy. Oh, I think I know what
on
question
Maduro.
It is.
It is, what is the worst phone call you've ever received?
Oh, Jesus.
Why do we get such dark ones, man?
The phone call was, shit. Hi, this is the Fangoria Podcast Network. We want you to do a show with Felissa and Tiffany.
And I said, fuck no.
Like, that is the worst phone call.
And then Tiffany, gave them some information on me, and now I have to do it. Yeah.
blackmail works.
The worst phone call. Can I ask you if you have an answer first?
I do have.
Because mine is not very fucking fun, I'll tell you.
I don't. I mean, because I feel like the worst phone calls I've gotten, I mean, certainly they're all about
death
and, you know, the one I had was with my dad when he had passed away. I actually had a dream the night before that he had died. And I had, I had a dream that my phone was ringing. And in my head, I don't know if my phone actually was ringing. I don't remember
was
looking
he
at
sick?
The next day. No, wow. Yeah, it was kind of always on and off sick.
So it wasn't like, oh, he's in hospice or.
I had a dream that my phone was ringing and I was like, ah, damn it. Who's calling in the middle of the night? My dad must have died. And then the next day, my family and I were going to a thing with our daughter, and I got a call from my mother who was like, I just want you to know your father passed away. And I was like, whoa. I actually remember going like, that's weird. That's a weird feeling because I sort of already felt that coming. So I don't know if the phone call was the worst part of it because there was a little bit of a, not that I know, I'm not a psychic, you know, but.
This is a really sad question. I mean,
it's a sucky question,
you know, because the truth of the matter is that
Andy,
you know, the worst call I ever got in my life, and it's just so sad to talk about because my dad was my best friend, and when I was in college and I got the call that he died, I felt like I could never live again. I loved my dad more than anything, and he showed me how to live and how to have fun and be joyful, and I feel like every day I live for my dad, and hopefully, you know, he lives through me, and I just wish my kids could have met him.
Wow.
Wow, and I'm sorry, but I mean, I do believe, like, in a higher power, whether you guys think that's hokey or not, but I actually believe that these people can see us and watch our stuff. And I do. It's just my personal belief.
Kane's face.
Kane doesn't. I mean, but, you know, I do. I think we have like an energy around us that is those
I
people.
Certainly hope that's
I hope
true.
So.
Because, you know, a lot of people think that maybe the worst phone call I got was when the producers called to tell me I wasn't doing Freddy versus Jason. But I never got that call. I never even got the courtesy of being told I've been replaced because, you know, you guys know I got the script for Freddy versus Jason at a lunch meeting with a New Line executive. She gave me the script and said, we're doing this movie. So wouldn't you think that that means you're doing it?
Fuck yeah.
So, you know, and then the months or the weeks after that, I started getting weird vibes from things, trying to not get phone calls returned and stuff. And I knew something was up. And then I just heard that they cast someone else. Never even given the courtesy of, hey, by the way, we're replacing you. So it's not that. But it is when I was living at my parents' house. I had, you know, gotten into SAG, done a couple of jobs, gotten burned, survived that. And I was trying to get my career back on track. And I was called that I had I was living in Reno at their house. And I had an audition for a Coors Light commercial. And so I flew to LA and just for overnight to do the audition. And, you know, that night I get the call that my dad died. So,
wow, it's all dads. Jesus.
Yeah. And he wasn't, you know, sick. And then the thing that pissed me off the most was that I was in a hurry to get to the airport. I said, see you later. And boom. And then the last time I saw him. So that's why every time I talk to my sons, I always say, I love you.
That's beautiful. I feel the same. I do the same thing with my kids.
Oof.
Wow. So that was
that's
depressing.
Heavy.
Yeah.
Thanks, Andy.
Dad's dying. Wow. But you know what? Why don't we talk about our best phone calls?
Best phone call.
That's a good idea.
I've gotten a lot of good phone calls.
Oh, I have one for sure.
You know, one phone call I got actually super excited about, and it may seem stupid because the movies are just a ridiculous mess. But when I got Sharknado 2, I was in an ice cream shop with my kids in Arizona. And when David Latt, because I had worked with them years ago, and I was like, how come you guys aren't bringing me on to your Sharknado movies? I got the call. He's like, we want you in New York. And I was like, I actually did, like, you know, like the Rock signs and kind of slid across the floor. Because to me, it was such pop culture, awesome, you know, like what a fun ride to be on. And for once, I could actually like show my kids a movie I did that I was like, hell yes. So to me, that was an amazingly fun phone call.
So for me, I have two daughters and I was really excited when I got pregnant the third time. So I went to the doctor super early on, like, you know, after 3 months.
Shout out to Dr.
And
Chin.
Dr. Chin, we have the same OBGYN who looks at both the JJs.
The celebrity vagina doctor.
So I went back to him and he's like, I can't really tell what it is, you know, and they did a blood test. And then I got the call that I was having a boy and my whole world was just like, my boy, my boy, my boy. And I named my son Thomas after my dad.
Oh, very cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Very good. And my phone call, the first one that comes to mind is, you know, I had done that screen test that I talked about, trying to get the role of Jason in Part 7. Beekler financed the screen test. I had a version of the costume, had my buddy Alan Marcus there. I was throwing him around. We did it on film, and then I didn't hear anything. So I was like, ooh, maybe it didn't go as well as I thought. But, you know, not thinking that John was putting together the footage, making it a little real to show Paramount. So it was understandable that it took a while, but I was at my now wife's, Susan's house, and she had an answering machine. Yes, I
you
know.
You have 42
myself,
messages.
But, and we got back, and because I had just I had just moved out of my house and I hadn't moved to another place yet, so I was staying at her house. So that's the phone number I was using. And we came home from sushi and noticed she had a message on her machine. She played it and it said, hi, this is John Beekler. And I thought, oh, this doesn't sound good already. And he says, I just wanted to leave a message for Mr. Voorhees.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, I have the chills.
And I looked at Susan. I was like, I think I got. And then he told me I got the part. So.
Oh, it's amazing.
It was very cool. I wish I had saved that somehow.
Sure, sure. But I mean, beautiful. Like, don't you guys think, like, anytime you've worked hard to get something and then you get the yes. I mean, that's, it is the best feeling, those phone calls. Like, 100%. I've had them with, you know, various projects or commercials and you're like waiting and you're waiting. Yeah. And like regular people don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's just like when you apply for a job at a bank, you know, that same kind of like, did I get it? Did I get it? Did I get it?
Of course.
You know, but for actors, it's, you know, it depends on so many different things. Like your look, your age. Did you say something stupid at the audition? Was your last project shitty and now they don't want you in this? Like, there's so many variables. So when you get it,
you're just elated. So happy. It's funny because the other great phone call I was thinking about was when Adam Green called and said, I have this project and I wrote a part for you. And
that,
I mean,
cool.
I cried because I'm a huge Hatchet fan and everybody knows I like the idea of working with Adam Green was just completely like an unbelievable magical thought. And I had always been a great, you know, a fan and admirer of his work.
Sure.
So I just met him at Rock and Shock a few years ago for the first time. I only met him in like 2015 and I saw him in the Uno Pizzeria, you know, that's connected to the hotel. And he was eating with his parents and I was eating with a friend and I looked across and thought, oh my gosh, if I could ever say hello to Adam Green. And so then to be a part of that and get
now,
that phone call.
Fast forward to like, you know, ignore call from Adam Green, ignore
Never.
Call from Adam Green.
I love you, Adam Green. We all
I'm
do.
Kidding. No, but
Thank
I mean,
you.
My phone call was the same with Adam, but I was a little bit, I'm always on the apprehensive side of, I don't get excited about things until I'm actually on the set shooting them. Because I always am in fear of project's not going to happen. They're going to decide all of a sudden, we don't want Tiffany to do it.
We were talking and you were like.
And, and Felissa was so excited. And I'm just like, well, until we're there. Like,
and I get, like, oh, we're there.
I get
there.
I don't like to be disappointed. So I'd much rather toe the line of like, yeah, shit ain't happening until
Which is what I should have done when I got that script.
Yes.
For Freddy versus Jason, I should have said, okay,
but you got why would you ever believe that they wouldn't have used you? I mean, that doesn't make sense. That's and so I've had that happen to me before with shit, too. Like, hey, here's a script. We can't wait to use you in this. And then they're fucking shooting. And I'm like, wait, hello? Right, hello? Right. Anyone?
And you're an icon, you know, playing Victor Crowley as well.
An icon. No, we are in the presence of
legend.
Icons.
I prefer legend.
Legend.
For Victor
We're
going to
go with legend. We've changed
I've heard object of affection.
Have you ever heard Adam tell the story of when he and I first met?
No.
On Grindr? We've heard that story.
Oh, yes, everybody has. No, but, you know, he wrote Hatchet and got it funded. And thought that I should be the guy to play Victor Crowley. So he set up a lunch meeting with me, him, and Corey, and to discuss, to see if they could talk me into playing this character. Because, you know, I've been told by a lot of writers, directors, producers that, hey, I have the next iconic horror character I want you to play. And I'm, oh, here we go again. So he talks about he was getting ready to come to the lunch meeting and Corey looks at him and said, what are you doing? He said, well, I'm bringing some stuff to ask Kane to sign it. And he says, oh, no, you are not, which I wouldn't have cared. It wouldn't have offended me. That's but Corey's cool. Like, this is a fucking business meeting. You're not bringing
you're not
stuff
fan
to get
out.
Signed. So he didn't. But
so I have to ask you, when you did the first Hatchet, did you recognize or feel like, wow, this is, you know.
As we were there, things. I did. I started thinking, wow, you know, he may be the guy that actually does come through with a new character that people love. And, you know, as you know, he had the entire story in his mind.
Sure.
And only told a little part of it in the first movie with a lot of, like, things that when you see the second one, you say, oh, that's why they said that in the first one. So for him to have the confidence that I'm not going to tell my whole story yet, that's pretty risky.
Cool.
He still did it in such a way that if there was only one movie, it still worked.
Yes.
But it made it so cool that in the next couple of movies, you were given details and reminded of something. That's why they did that, because they were going to talk about this.
Is but there a fifth?
That's why he comes across so well, and like why genre fans love Adam Green so much is that they recognize how much of a fan he himself is.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not just enough to be a great filmmaker and to have, you know, which you have to have. You have to know editing. You have to know pace and timing. But to be able to infuse the heart into it is what makes all of us go, oh, shit, he gets it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And
which is probably why you signed on.
He's as sweet and humble as he is talented. That's also the beauty of Adam. He's such a gentle person, a kind person, and everyone wants to be around him. You know?
Yeah, and I wanted to add one thing to my phone call, the good phone call. Yeah. It when I look back on it, it was interesting that I was almost more excited that I got the role of Jason because I had read the script and saw how many stunts Jason has to do. So that was almost a bigger factor in my excitement that, God, I get to do a full burn. I got to fall through these stairs. Roof has to fall on my head and get electrocuted. All this stuff. So I'm looking from a stunt person's point of view, not really realizing the impact of playing the character was going to have on my career.
Wow.
And that's why when I did the Fangoria Weekend of Horrors, 1988, LAX Airport, and saw those people following me out of the auditorium when I thought nobody knew who the hell I was, that was a whole change in my entire career. So, but it, you know, it's funny that I wasn't excited only about the character.
Wow. And that's so when Kane went home and thought, I am an icon. Yeah. Icon.
Actually, icon. Coined the phrase myself. That's why it's not really in the dictionary.
Labeled yourself the icon.
I'm a religious effigy. Yeah. Yes. So what else can I call?
This conversation went all over the map, and it is so sickeningly sweet now. I think we need to kill somebody.
We need to kill someone.
We need to kill somebody.
Oh, you know what?
I don't know. You had some bad stuff. I had some bad stuff. You had some bad stuff. But the worst of the day,
Andy Gateway.
Andy Gateway needs to die.
We're killing you, Andy Gateway.
You depressed us. You made us sad. You made us cry.
We're getting you now, Andy.
I'm going to take the bat to your fucking face.
There you go.
Casualty Friday is a Fangoria Podcast Network original, hosted by Tiffany Shepis, Felissa Rose, and Kane Hodder. Executive producers, Dallas Sonnier, Phil Nobile Jr., Matt Mangiarides, and Justin Martell. Produced by Natasha Pesetta. Associate producer, Jessica Safavamir. Art and design by Jason Koslerich. Sound recording, design, and mixing by Natasha Pesetta. Music by John Brennan. For Fangoria, Brandon Wynardi, and Rachel Wilson.